Yeah, you know what you can get me, Pee-wee?
What? El Hombre.
First of all, as a service to the listeners, this is an absolute forget about it.
El Hombre.
He's a pariah. I mean, it's like going after raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens.
El Hombre.
As much as we look forward to this appearance every single week here with Wyman and Bob, there was a bit of dread today, wondering how he might celebrate, how he might tap dance, how he might take a victory lap after last night's absolute just freight training of the Seattle Mariners by his beloved Phillies. He joins us now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. The one, the only El Hombre, Michael Bradley's here. How are you, man?
You're kidding. You think I'm going to gloat? Have you seen anything about the Phillies this year? Good Lord.
See,
what they did last Thursday night when they gave up 7 runs in the ninth inning against the Let's Go's, I got to keep my head down and just pray that this is the beginning of something good, because this team is a disaster right now.
I was telling Dave that I'm like, he's either going to do a victory lap or he's gonna talk about how this is still a team under 500 and this game means nothing. They're still dreadful. He was going to go one of two ways with you on this, and you were
50% right, because there's no way I'm coming on going, woohoo, we won 9-0, because they could just as soon get shut out for the next 2 days and skulk into Los Angeles with on a 2-game losing streak. So I'm not taking anything for granted with this bunch.
You know what? That is such a – and I don't know how I feel about it, but that's such a East Coast versus West Coast thing. Like, we were talking earlier, Michael, about how after the Seahawks lost, you know, on the interception on the one-yard line in the Super Bowl 49, everybody just didn't want to hear it. Like, and I talked to somebody today who said, when that happened, I turned off the TV and just, you know, went for a walk and didn't watch, listen to sports or anything. And that's what happened at our station. It just, like, entirely tanked. Whereas on the East Coast, Philly, you know, they're going to be calling in and complaining and screaming and yelling. And it's just a much more, I don't know, I feel like there's a lot of toughness in that. And I feel like a lot of the, you know, West Coast, it's kind of like it's almost like they get their feelings hurt. Whereas, and I feel like somebody from the West Coast would gloat after a win like you just had, whereas you're just sitting there going, no, my team sucks. They're terrible. Yeah.
Well, I mean, look, first of all, we marinated it here. You know, we lie in the juices and like simmer and let it losses just get into every pore. There's no way, nothing good whatsoever about a team that is not playing well and all of a sudden wins a game.
Yeah.
Right, it's you know, make sure that this is, you're going to do something good. Now tonight, I know the Phillies; they're going to score 2 runs tonight. All right, you just got to get 3. You get 3 on the board, you're set. Now your favorite, I think, is it Nola going against Ray tonight?
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, Nola's been pitching well of late, but he's only going to throw 6 or 7 innings at the most. So then you get into the bullpen, and that could be a catastrophe. So the Phillies don't. We were told at the beginning of the year, this team's going to score 1 million runs. Yeah, right. Their pitching has actually been pretty good, and all these high priced hitters. What's his name? Schwarber sitting like 150 or something. It's horrible.
Yeah, we're kind of going through it here, Michael. If you look at the Mariners stats, I mean, there's a number of guys there. I think there's only 5 total players on the team hitting above 200 right now.
Wow.
So it's not gone the way we had hoped. They got off to a great start, and then the offense is absolutely face planted at this point. So we're all trying to figure out in a scenario like that. I know it's 30 games. That's the part people get tired of hearing is, hey, it's 162, you're only game 30, you got 132 left to play. We were at this point last season. They got destroyed by San Diego, felt like the season was over. They end up winning 90 games. So you have to learn something from that. But, you know, in looking at the lack of production from an entire lineup, do you look at the manager? Do you look at the GM who assembled the team, roster construction, or how do you sort of parse that out when you're looking at something that just flat out isn't working?
Well, it really depends on whether the players that are not working have had success before, right? So if you've got some guys that over the past couple of years have been good and then all of a sudden they're not, then I look at the manager because I start to say, well, what's the message? I mean, with the Phillies, I wanted Joe Girardi fired before the final out. I want him fired in the bottom of the ninth against the Mets on Thursday night when they gacked up that 7-1 lead in the ninth inning. Because to me, if your team has that little heart and has that little ability to really stand up and be tough, that's a reflection of the manager. to me. Because they sure heck have spent enough money on guys who have track records that are pretty good. So, you know, if you are not playing well and you've got some talent, then that to me is the manager. Now, it could also be the players. You got to remember, there's one thing to hit 300 and have 28 homers and 100, you know, 90 RBIs, and there's another thing to be a winning baseball player. It's the same thing as in the NBA. You see guys who average 22 points all the time a game, and they play on rotten teams. And then they get on a good team and they score 14, and it's because now you got to play to win rather than just playing it to accumulate stats.
Is there sympathy nationwide for Mariner fans? Because I think in the three major sports anyway, or four major sports, it's the longest playoff drought.
You got a hockey team now. You better say four major sports.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
It's the longest drought.
And I was including soccer, of course. No, but yeah, I mean, I remember when the Bills made the playoffs a few years ago. I think it was 2017. That ended and then the Seahawks took the crown, the mantle.
Yeah.
Yes.
The Mariners.
There's really no people don't. I'll bet you anything you got in your pocket that if you went up to a Philadelphia fan and said, "Who's got the longest playoff drought in baseball right now?" they would probably say the Phillies.
Yeah.
They wouldn't know that Seattle. I mean, the one thing about Seattle is you've got that wonderful Emerald City up there, and you've got the beautiful green, and it's a great spot. But it's tucked up there in the corner, and a lot of people don't always say, "Oh yeah, Seattle." I pay a lot of attention to their teams.
Yeah, no, I can't blame them. I mean, they haven't really given people a reason to talk about them in other parts of the country the way the Seahawks did. So plus it's such a grind. You're talking 162 games, and it's such a long season. But you know, in looking at what's going on in baseball just in general, and I think we touched on this last time, but I feel like we've been seeing it all week again, and that is these strike zones and umpires. And I don't know if the Bumgarner thing had happened when we talked to you last time. But I'm sure you saw that replay of, these days they're not checking the hat and the belt and everything they were for foreign substances. Now they're just touching the fingers and, okay, you're good, go on. And you had that ump sitting there holding his fingers, staring longingly into his eyes, waiting for him to make eye contact. You're just going, what is happening with the umpires these days? I mean, strike zones are one thing, and they've been, in my opinion, really, really poor this year. But then moments like that, how do you even explain something like that other than that's an ump looking to intentionally get under the skin of a player for whatever reason?
Yeah, that was as bizarre a thing as I've seen. I mean, let's face it. We're hearing all this problem. Oh, the balls are different. Oh, they can't do this. That to me is the biggest indication that every pitcher was cheating. That every pitcher had some stuff on his hands that was giving him the grip on the ball, and they were saying, "Oh, we got control over the ball. Don't worry about it because we got spider tack or whatever the heck, super glue or whatever it is that we're using." So that's the first thing, that cheating was so rampant that now that the players can't cheat, I'm sure they'll find something else, but now that they can't cheat as overtly, they don't have control of the balls. But when an umpire does something like that, that was just the strangest thing I've seen. He's staring into his eyes, just holding his hand. Yeah. If you take a look at how they check pitchers' hands, the pitcher generally doesn't stop walking.
Yeah.
He walks towards the umpire, puts his hand out. The umpire grabs the hand, slaps it like on the palm and then on the back, and lets him go. So it's weird. Baseball has a real, real problem right now. And, I mean, with the playoffs in the NBA and then the draft, and the hockey playoffs are going to go even longer, going into June, you're going to have baseball right up against football, and football keeps making good decisions, right? Tom Brady has already been announced as the new Fox TV announcer, right?
$375 million, Michael. Jeez.
Yeah, so he's going to make $37.5 million a year to be on television, which is unprecedented. Now, the funny thing about it is nobody's going to ever say, "You believe the money these announcers make?" No, they only complain when the players are getting paid.
Yeah,
so, right. But everything about the NFL, everybody's all excited. They're releasing the schedule in 2 days, and people are going nuts. And they've released a couple games. Oh, the doubleheader on September 19th on Monday Night Football. And here's the England games. And we're going to play in Botswana. I don't know. But fans go nuts for the NFL, and the NBA's offseason is, you know, the most popular thing among young people, and yet baseball just completely is known for stupid stuff like umpires holding pitchers' hands.
Yeah, are they the worst? I mean, because NBA refs can be fairly egotistical, but I feel like, you know, maybe hockey. Bob and I were just talking about the culture in hockey and how these guys will beat the heck out of each other with, like, no emotions on their face whatsoever.
They never look angry. They just fight.
That's part of the game.
Just part of
the
game.
Baseball umpires are the most arrogant. They really are. And it goes back. Look, Richie Phillips, when he was the umpire's general counsel, did a hell of a job getting them more money, getting them tremendous benefits, making it into a job, with his full-time job. A lot of NFL officials are working the rest of the year when they're not in season. These guys in the NBA, when you watch these games, watch a star player drive to the basket. If he gets knocked to the floor, or more likely flops to the floor, the referee will wait 2 seconds to see if the ball goes in or not. If it doesn't go in, then you see the foul, because they got to protect the stars. I think the NBA refs are taking their instructions from the league, as are the NFL refs. I think the umpires in baseball are kind of on their own and are being, you know, they're going to be obsolete, at least behind the plate, in terms of calling balls and strikes in a couple of years.
Hey, is just back to the Brady thing for a moment. I'm just looking at that story and just marveling at the amount of money, and Dave and I talked about it earlier, just going, are these networks getting the return on these investments, the money that's being paid to Tony Romo and the money that will be paid to Tom Brady and Drew Brees? And I understand the credibility that comes with their presence, but is somebody tuning into the game that otherwise wouldn't because one of those guys is there? I mean, I'm just trying to figure out where does the payoff come? Are they getting, is somebody going to advertise that otherwise wouldn't advertise there, or they're going to increase the rates? How do they get their money back for that?
Well, first of all, these are not altruistic entities. Okay?
Certainly.
They do not exist to be philanthropic in their missions. So they're certainly getting the money back. I mean, they're paying obscene amounts of money for the rights to televise the games. Now they're paying unprecedented amounts to the people who sit there and talk about the games. That just tells you how much they're making on the ads, and how the NFL, there's no other league that would even, someone could even come within close to a half of that, even a third of that, to call the games, except for the NFL, because that's how much money is out there. Every year, 19 of the top 20 rated television programs are NFL football games.
Yep.
There's no question that they're getting the return. And I'm with you. I have never turned on a game. I'm sitting down at 4 o'clock Eastern on a Sunday. I've got the Packers Broncos with Joe Buck and Troy Aikman, or I've got the Chargers Chiefs with Jim Nantz and Tony Romo. And I always have two TVs, but I would never say, "Well, I'm going with the Chargers Chiefs because I want to hear Tony Romo and hello, friends." No, I want to see the better game.
Right, right. Yeah, it's a good question Bob asked. I don't really get it. I do like listening to Tom Brady, but hey, let me ask you this. Okay, so what happens here is going to happen here in Seattle. Let's say it happens in Philly. You have Russell Wilson as your quarterback, and he goes somewhere else, let's say to the Washington football team or Commandos or whatever.
Well, that's their hated rival, though.
Yeah, but I mean,
we don't hate them as much as we hate the Gigantes or the Cowboys. But let's say he goes to the Lions. Let's say he goes to the Lions.
So how does he get treated when he comes back? Because there is some question as to, you know, whether or not Russ, when he comes back here, we don't know when they're going to play, but we know he's coming back here. It's a home game, but how would Philly fans treat?
It really depends. Did he ask out?
Pretty much.
If he asked out, he will be booed mercilessly.
Yeah.
The fans will ride. And I'm talking about Philadelphia. He will be ridden by the fans. Every time he screws up, there will be hosannas and cheers emanating from the crowd. It really comes down to whether or not he won it out or not.
Yeah. Well, and it's kind of a thin line because, you know, some are saying, well, you know, the Seahawks didn't do the things to make him happy. And then the Seahawks are like, you know, why would we trade, one of 12 or 10 quarterbacks of his caliber? So, yeah, but look, everybody always sides with the team, right? You always go with the laundry.
Not always, because here's the thing. If a player was traded that was the fans loved in Philadelphia, if you had a guy, you know, say they traded Chase Utley, and there was a group of people after the Phillies won the World Series in 2008, then they went again in 2009, 2010 they lose in the NLCS, then 2011 they lose with a 102 win season in the NLDS. There were people then saying after that, break it up. Right now, don't keep these guys around too long. It's going to hurt the franchise. If they had traded somebody like Chase Utley, he would have been cheered. He would have been, the fans would have shown up to his game in his jersey. They would have given him a standing ovation. It would have been a love fest. And then they would have screamed at whatever general manager sent him away. So it really depends on the circumstances. But if the guy asked out, oh, he deserves to be booed and screamed at and harangued and with everything. You know, nothing profane and nothing over the line. You don't hurt his family or anything or throw anything at him, but you let him know that you're mad at him for sure.
Hey, how is Bryce Harper received in Philly? I'm curious because he's a guy that has an edge, a bit of an attitude, what have you. And we got a player like that on the Mariners who hasn't achieved anything yet, even close to the level, obviously, of Bryce Harper, and Jared Kelnick, who is a guy who's kind of polarizing out here. Came with a lot of hype, a lot of confidence in himself and voiced it and has really struggled. But I'm just curious, as a guy that's, Harper's got two MVPs, I think, at this point in his career.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
How is he received out there?
No, he is beloved. He's a smart guy, right? So what did he do? He immediately got cleats made up with the Philly Fanatic on them. Mm-hmm. He wears a Fanatic headband. When he goes out to the right field, he bows to the fans. He has said everything right. He has done everything right, and then he's won an MVP. So however you look at it, whether it's how does he treat the fans, how does he respond to the Philadelphia culture, he's done that great. And then he's come out and he's delivered, delivered on at the plate, and so fans love him.
Yeah.
And he as soon as he came here, he said, I'm going to be a Philly guy. I'm going to be exactly what you want. And he must have done some research, or he had someone whisper in his ear, because he hasn't made a bad step yet.
Yeah, and so he kind of went opposite of your third baseman Baum, right?
but they love him
Baum,
they like him now, right?
Everybody's fine with Baum. No problem with Baum.
Yeah. So I mean,
no problem with Alec Baum because he owned it.
Right.
He owned it. And look, when you're making three errors and you're playing like garbage and people are booing you, you know, it's not easy to go, hey, you know, they're right. Oh, okay, everybody. No, it's like you're sitting there going, son of a, you know, you're not happy. So I think he handled that well. People here are okay with you if you own it. If you don't own it, then you deserve what you get.
Yeah, it's just Bryce Harper reminds me of Kelnick, or Kelnick reminds me of Harper, just in attitude and sort of being polarizing based on, oh, is he arrogant? He thinks he's all this and
super intense.
Yeah, and Harper's lived up to it, though. He's got two MVPs, and he goes to a new city, signs a massive deal, which could create a ton of pressure to perform, and has performed. So that's the bottom line. I mean, he could say all the right things that Philly fans love and do all the right things and wear all the gear you're talking about, but if he's not performing, they're not going to give a damn.
No, you're right. But a perfect example in Philadelphia was when Pete Rose came here in 79. Here's a guy who was – everybody hated him. All around the country. If you weren't a Reds fan, you hated Pete Rose, and if you were a Reds fan, you hated Pete Rose. But when he came to Philadelphia, he started, you know, spiking the ball after the third out when he was at first base. Then in the 1980 World Series, what does he do? Bob Boone, Game 6, botches the pop up, and there's Pete Rose snatching the ball out of the air, saying, "I'm not going to let you guys blow another one," and he did it. So they loved him here.
Episode 1 of Winning Time in the Bank. What do you think, Michael? You see the last episode?
I watched them all. I'm all caught up. I watched the last one last night. I love it. I mean, but see, this is the time for me. You got to remember, my formative years were from 70 to 80. I went from 8 to 18. Yeah. But when it comes to the NBA, there's nothing better than the 1980s.
Yeah.
And just reliving that whole thing. And by the way, if you get a chance, after you watch the episode, they have Rick Fox doing like a talk back.
Yes.
Have you seen John C. Reilly lately?
Yeah, he looks like a clown.
Oh, with, It's unbelievable. Blonde, curly, out of control hair. And he's like showing up in public like that. Dude, I mean, I know you're a movie star and you can do whatever you want, but come on.
It looked reddish to me. I was like, if he'd had
a part.
Yeah, if he would have had like a big red nose,
he might be playing. He's doing it for a role or something. Who knows?
Yeah, maybe he is. If he is, by the way, and I don't want to see the movie because I'll have nightmares.
Yeah,
but, I mean, that image has stuck with me.
Yeah, he's.
I'm telling you, it's a great time, and it's great. You know, the whole Bird Magic thing, and the whole Kareem thing, and the whole Lakers and everything. It's just a great slice of time for me and a time capsule. Someone born in the 80s or 90s, they're not going to get it.
Yeah, that's true.
Michael, great stuff as always. You can follow him on Twitter at Daily Ombre. At Daily Ombre is where you're going to find him on Twitter, and you find him here every Tuesday with Wyman and Bob. We appreciate it, man. We'll talk again next week.
So long, suckers.
So funny. He's not doing the victory lap about the Phillies. He's still ripping them.
That's hilarious.
Are you kidding me? We're terrible.
Kind of knew that was going to happen.
That is the mentality out there.
The second he started speaking and saying, you know, describing it, I'm like, of course.
Yeah.
Of course. He's
yeah, there's
right.
No joy in a 9-0 win over the under 500 Mariners. No, they need to see like 10 of those in a row before they start going, okay, now we got something here. But the M's are taking on the Phillies tonight. Game 2 of the series. And the T-Mobile Park roof, I'm going to say, is going to be open. Looks from our vantage point here, looks like a nice day. So that's the Mariners roof report covered by Acton's Quality Roofing. So, yeah, it's a tough existence out there in Philly, man. You've got to come through on a very consistent basis or they're lining up to let you know.
Yeah, and I remember going back there a couple of times, they were even giving the broadcasters a hard time.
Is that the one where you told the person, oh, shut up?
That was Cleveland.
Oh, that was Cleveland?
Yeah, but
there
was something in Philly where I said that, you know, something about drunkenness or whatever, and then I got a hate letter here at the station.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, because somebody from Philadelphia was offended.
Oh, no.
It's like, come on, it was a compliment.
Were they okay? Did they make it out okay after
Yeah,
the comments?
I was like, you're not a true Philly fan if you're whining about being called a name.
Yeah, a true Philly fan would go, really, that's the best you got? Come on, you better bring your A-game, champ. I got that from my family as a kid growing up. You got to do better than that.
That's right.
They wrote a letter. Who writes letters? Come on. Jeez, all right. Our thanks to El Ombre again. You can follow him on Twitter at Daily Ombre is where you're going to find him. What do you think? Do the Mariners turn it around tonight?
Yes.
Game 2. Robbie Ray gets it done.
What a way to end a show. What if I'd have said, nah, I don't think so, man.
Then we would have been waiting to pounce on you tomorrow when the Mariners go out and win tonight. And that's hopefully what is going to happen. You got the pregame show coming up here in a matter of moments. Want to thank our guests, Danny Young, Paul Moyer, and El Ombre, Michael Bradley, for joining us on the program. If you missed any of today's show, head to seattlesports.com. Click the podcast tab. Click on our picture. Everything is waiting for you there after the show each and every day. Click subscribe. Then you never have to worry about it again. We're going to be back tomorrow right here with Wyman and Bob, Seattle Sports Station on 710.